Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to violence.
Welcome to Lost in the Static.
Welcome to Lost in the Static, everybody. Hi.
Hey, Scott, do you remember that time when you were trying to marry those two women and then your ex-girlfriend came into the picture and then the gunfight broke out at the Penguin Factory?
No, it seems like I can't remember past the last half hour of my life.
Well, come on, you don't draw off our continuity?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Just do the Adam and Eve promo and we'll get
it. Go to adamandeve.com at the very end, put in the promo code STATIC. You get 3 free DVDs, 50% off of a single item. 3 for a shift.
3 free DVDs.
Use the promo code STATIC at the very end. You get 3 free DVDs, free shipping in the United States, 50% off of a single item, and a free mystery gift, plus a nice warm feeling knowing that you're keeping the lights on for Josh and I. And you can also go to 1201beyond.com and check out our Amazon suggestions and links and do your Amazon shopping through that.
Exactly. And now, the reason I made the continuity gag at the beginning was, what does continuity mean to you? When you're invested in a franchise, in a show, in a novel series, in a comic, whatever, you as Scott, does it matter that they have a tight continuity, or does the history of whatever, say you're at the 28th episode, issue whatever, does it matter what happened in the previous 27, or do you just care about right now?
Depends on the show. Honestly, depends on the show. Like, there are plenty of sitcoms and some other stuff out there, and certainly, cartoons and things where you get the continuity for 30 minutes and that's about it.
So
I don't mind
this self-contained bottle show.
I don't mind the episodic show really all that much. However, in some of the shows, for instance, like Adventure Time, there is an underlying continuity and there's kind of this underlying story of what happened to the world and because the land of Oo is obviously Earth, but we're not quite sure where on Earth, but it's obviously Earth, and they often talk about the Mushroom Wars, and the leading theory is the Mushroom War was the nuclear war of World War III or whatever. And so there is an underlying continuity there that makes me curious about the history of this world. Where did Finn come from? Where are all the other humans? Why do we have sentient candy running around? Where did Simon find the crown that turned him into the Ice King? Why is Marceline a vampire?
What would be your reaction then if all of a sudden the next season of Adventure Time comes out and says, hey, the last 4 seasons, those never happened. This season is only in continuity with the first season, and all that other stuff that you liked never happened, so now we're kind of starting over, and you have what's called retrocontinuity or retconning.
I don't think it would work with Adventure Time in particular. I think it works with other... we've talked about the Star Trek movie and the new Star Trek reboot.
That's an alternate timeline, though.
That's an alternate timeline.
That's not retconning, really.
Agreed, but that is a way to do it. A way to say that doesn't matter, so we're moving on to this.
The reason this is relevant is when Disney acquired Lucasfilm last year.
Right.
Dark Horse Comics has had the Star Wars license since about 1991, 1992, okay? They've done what's called the Expanded Universe.
Right.
And with that Expanded Universe, Lucasfilm had a very tight continuity.
Right.
You cannot do this with this character. You can't...
The cat is
attacking
a bag.
A bag, yes.
Okay.
You cannot do this, and you can do this, and you have to do this, and this character wouldn't act like that, and you can't kill this character because that affects this storyline, etc., etc.
Right.
Well, now that Disney owns Lucasfilm,
yes,
they've said, okay, we're pulling the license back away from Dark Horse and giving it to Marvel Comics, which we own.
Their property, yeah, makes
now,
sense.
Keep in mind, everything Dark Horse has done since the 90s when they got this has been the official, this is what happened after Return of the Jedi.
Okay.
Now Lucasfilm is saying, or Lucasfilm through Disney is saying, nope, nope, none of that happened anymore. The last 20, 25 years, none of that happened. Now we're starting over. What comes out in the new Marvel comic? That's what happened after Return of the Jedi. All the video games that were in continuity are no longer. All the books, all the comics, none of that actually happened anymore. It was continuity for all those years. Now it's not.
Okay. I am about to state probably a very unpopular opinion.
Fair enough.
When it comes to comics, specifically comics, I think a reboot of everything is a good idea.
That is a very unpopular statement because I think that is incredibly stupid.
I think it's a good idea because it gives you a chance to get a new audience. Let's face it.
While shitting on your old one.
And maybe the old one was dwindling. I don't have their numbers. But it's very popular It's very possible over the past 20 years that maybe the audience was dwindling. Maybe the audience that you think is there isn't.
Actually, the Star Wars comics were selling better through Dark Horse than they ever had been before. Disney just wants to pull everything under one rainbow, and they don't want people to be going, well, see, in the Dark Horse comic, they did this.
And they want to make it in continuity with their movies that they're making. They want to make it in continuity at the company that they own. I think it's perfectly within their rights.
Oh, it's within their rights. I think it's douchebaggy.
I think it's a good idea. I don't think it's all that douchebaggy. I think it's, you know, all right, you know, Dark Horse made good comics from what I understand, and their Star Wars comics were good, and when we're talking Star Wars and the stuff that I follow and understand and all of that, we're talking video games, some of the best Star Wars video games out there. And I'm okay with that because they're still great games and they're still great comics. They may not be in continuity, so what? They're still great works of art.
But see, what bothers me about this whole thing, and Lucasfilm was doing this even before the Disney thing, even before the Dark Horse thing, honestly, was it bothers me that for a certain period of time, yes, this is what happened. Then, no, I've changed my mind. Now this is what happened. No, I don't like that. Now this is what happened. It's so splintered, it becomes pointless.
Wait a minute. When did it splinter like that? You've just said that this is the first time Disney is doing this, is going, Disney. That's not what happened.
Lucasfilm did this back in the 80s. Remember the Droids and Ewoks cartoons that were on Saturday mornings?
Yes.
For the longest time, Lucas said, because Droids takes place right before Episode 4. It takes place, you know, Episode 3 hadn't been made yet,
right.
But it takes place before A New Hope. And he always said, this is continuity. This is what 3PO and R2 had happened to them beforehand.
Obviously not.
Then when he made the prequels, he's like, well, wait a minute, that contradicts what I want to do now. Now all the Droids and Ewoks stuff, that didn't happen before that. No. Now that didn't happen.
Okay.
And I think that is disingenuous to every reader who was like, okay, this is what happened. Oh, now it's not? Well, make up your fucking mind.
Yeah, deal with it.
You know, deal with a history. I think retconning is what you do when you don't know what to do anymore.
See, I'm not a fan of... Now, retcon can be done well, and it can be done very badly. And when it's done well, it works. But when it comes to pushing everything aside and going, okay, we're starting fresh, the reboot retcon, if you will, I don't have a problem with it. Especially when it comes to comics, especially when it comes to Star Wars, because that's Lucas. That's what he does. And now it's Disney. And I think it's within their rights. And I think it's not a bad thing because I think the audience, you know, they want to change the audience for some reason.
It confuses the audience. So now all of a sudden, some new kid that's getting into Star Wars, they see the Marvel comic and then they see a Dark Horse comic from 5 years ago. And they go, wait a minute, these things completely contradict one another. Now I'm confused. Now I'm getting irritated. I'm going to stop buying this comic book.
No.
It's confusing now.
No, I don't think it is. And especially the young kids, I think that they're going to find the Marvel line or whatever line that they want to follow, and they're going to follow it. And let me say that, you know, again, pushing this stuff aside is not in any way shitting on its artistic
qualities.
Because I've looked at some of the Dark Horse comics, on Star Wars. I you know me, I don't follow comics. They are good works of art. Looking at Dark Forces, looking at Knights of the Old Republic and
Shadows of the Empire.
X-Wing versus TIE Fighter and stuff like that, the video games that remain in continuity. Okay, now they're not in continuity, but you're in no way shitting on their artistic qualities in any way.
I think you're shitting still on the great audience, games. Though.
I don't. I really don't, because maybe Disney has somebody that is at the helm of this project going, I have an idea of a different direction to go. And I don't think it's shitting on the audience to go, I have this property, I have these rights, I'm going to take it in a different direction. They're not actively going out and saying, you know, don't buy the Dark Horse comics, or all these artists that worked on the Dark Horse stuff were shit artists and we hate them, blah, blah, blah. They're not saying that in any way, shape, or form. They're just saying, we're taking our project in a new direction.
No, what they are kind of saying that in a backhanded way. They're kind of saying, see, all of that was essentially fan fiction, because this is the real what happened before or after the movies.
No, I'm sorry, but the fact is that something that well produced and that well put together and with the company's blessing is not fan fiction. And even if it was, good fan fiction is still good fiction.
Because, see, like, there was one. It wasn't even necessarily a reboot, but it was sort of. DC Comics by the 1980s had become so convoluted with alternate universes, alternate timelines, to the point where, like, you'd have a Superman story pre-1985 that'd be like, okay, does that take place on Earth X where this happens, or is this Earth Y, or is this Earth 4, or does this take place 40 years? And it was so convoluted. They had all these different timelines. They actually coalesced all of them. So it wasn't a reboot like, hey, none of that happened. They had a 12-issue miniseries called The Crisis on Infinite Earths, where all of these timelines were meshed together to restart in 1986.
That's the way to do
That's the way to do it. You didn't erase those. Those all still happened, but they didn't happen.
And see, and I think even the Star Wars comics and stuff that have been going on for 20 years, again, give them a chance to end. Give them and they don't necessarily have to tie into your new storyline, but give them a chance to end. And this is what made me angry about the New 52. This is what made me angry about a lot of these comic reboots. I don't think reboots are a bad thing, but give your story arcs a time to come. You know, go to your artist and say, okay, you guys have 10 issues. You know, go to Dark Horse. We're going to let you publish the next 12 issues, once a month or whatever the hell they come out, or if it's weekly, the next 52. You've got the next year. Wrap it up. And that's the way it's supposed to be done. A reboot where you simply slice off the story arcs and never give anybody a chance to get any closure, that's a shitty thing to do. But reboots within themselves, I don't think is a bad thing. I don't. I think it gives you a chance to get a new audience, to get a new younger audience, to get an audience that maybe wasn't involved before. Because for me to pick up a Dark Horse Star Wars comic, I've got 20 years of continuity that I got to catch up on. Do you know how many TV shows I've given up on because I've got 8 seasons of continuity that I have to go back and watch for?
But then you don't think it confuses the audience that, well, see, this happened, but even though this happened, it didn't actually happen, and then this actually kind of happened, but only to this one character who is from an alternate reality who only remembers that this one thing happened?
No, I don't. I think if your publicity is done right, and if your story writing is done right, it shouldn't be.
Well, that's one of the problems. It's usually not done right. And even when it is somewhat done right, it's not explained to the audience why it's done right.
For instance,
the Godzilla franchise.
Okay.
Okay, Godzilla 1954. I'm just going to go off the American timeline here. Okay, mm-hmm. Yeah. Godzilla 1954 came out. Godzilla dies at the end of that. Sorry, 60-year-old plot spoiler, but Godzilla dies at the end of that. And then, you know, they kept making the movies and they kept getting more and more cartoony and more goofy and much more and more kid oriented until 1977 with Terror of Mechagodzilla, which was the last Showa era. Okay. And then the franchise went into hibernation. Then when they wanted to reboot it in 1984 in Japan, but 1985, they said, all right, we don't want to have all these other monsters and the goofiness and Godzilla dancing and all that. So Godzilla 1985 is only a sequel to Godzilla 1954. The 17 movies that took place in between that, those never happened.
Okay.
And I think while Godzilla 1985 is my favorite film of the franchise, it's kind of shitty to do to all those other movies that, yeah, you never happened. And then the movies that followed 85 kept that continuity. So really,
why
Raids Again through Terror of Mechagodzilla never happened.
Why is that a shitty thing to do, though? Why is it shitty to go, okay, you guys never happened? They're not going and saying, okay, erase all of the films, burn the prints, and none of it was ever made. They're not at all saying that. And you know, nobody's coming into the house and grabbing all your Dark Horse comics and burning them, going, hey, never happened, foof. You know, that's not happening. Nobody is shitting, again, on the artistic qualities of these films or those deals. All they're saying is, we're taking our license, our project, and we're moving in a new direction.
But that is, like I said, a backhanded way of saying, what you did, we don't think was good enough to fit into what we're doing now. For instance, the character of John Munch on TV, Richard Belzer's character from Homicide: Life on the Street, that is
right.
the most crossed over character ever.
Yes.
I think he's been on 9 different shows as the same character. On Homicide: Life on the Street, he was raised in Baltimore, and he had flashbacks to his childhood in Baltimore. Then, after Homicide was over, his character, with the continuity, they mentioned Baltimore many times and him working on Homicide, moves to New York. Then, all of a sudden, he's got flashbacks to growing up in New York because they needed that for the plot line. That's kind of saying, we don't care about the continuity, just go with it. Munch grew up in Baltimore when he was in a show that took place in Baltimore. He grew up in New York when he was on a show that took place in New York. It's just for the show. Just quit being so nitpicky, is what they always call you. Quit being nitpicky. And I'm going, no, you're not doing your job when you do that. Well, we want him to have grown up in New York because.
Okay.
That's you're not doing your job as a writer or as a producer.
No, that's perfectly fine if it works for the show.
I will never agree to that. That is, I think, utter bullshit. Because if you say, yes, this is continuity, like the Star Wars stuff, you know, this happened pre or post, whatever the story is, that's one thing. But then you've got the other way where Paramount handled the Star Trek stuff. If it didn't happen on screen, didn't happen in a movie, didn't happen on one of the TV shows, didn't happen in the cartoon,
didn't happen.
All the comics, all the books, all the video games, Those never happened. They said that straight out. You don't feel so bad when they ignore the cool stuff that happens in the comics or the role-playing games or whatnot, because they outright told you it kind of never happened. You weren't all of a sudden 20 years later have the rug pulled out. Yeah, that really cool comic book that we've been referencing for 20 years. Yeah, we've decided that doesn't fit anymore.
And my answer to you, Josh, is with so many things of going, it's a TV show. It's a character. There is a separation. And to me, like within its own series, I think continuity is important with Doctor Who, 50 years of continuity that Moffat has been kind of shitting on lately.
I don't even know who Moffat. I don't watch Doctor Who. So you'll have to
explain that. The fans will understand. Stephen Moffat has been the chief writer for Matt Smith and kind of the end of David Tennant and whatnot. He's kind of been in charge of Doctor Who lately.
I know a lot of people didn't like whatever Day of the Doctor did.
Right. One of the chief rules of the Doctor and one of the things that he's been going through for a long time was that he gets 12 incarnations.
I've read that.
And only 12 incarnations. Well, thanks to John Hurt and a couple others, he now has 13. Except
from what I've understood, John Hurt didn't really... He's not really the Doctor.
No, he's the Doctor.
Something.
No, he's the Doctor.
Chuck Sonnenberg was trying to explain it, and not being a Doctor Who fan, I think I might have missed the explanation.
Yeah, but the simple fact is that that Moffat is kind of pooping on some continuity and some rules there. Meh. But again, I think that we're getting off the track. Let me go back. I think continuity within a series, Adventure Time. Continuity within Adventure Time, the series itself, is very important. Technically, they've had a crossover with Futurama.
How so?
Bender? John DiMaggio does the voices for Bender and Jake the Dog.
Okay.
And there was one time when I think it was the Bender and Fry came upon Finn and Jake chained up in a dungeon. And Bender and Jake start talking to one another. And Fry is like, I feel very out of place here. Ha 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 ha. Same voice actor, blah, blah, blah.
Well, so, see, I'm not so sure that's supposed to be continuity or in-joke.
No, that's an in-joke. That's an in-joke. That's not what I'm talking about. But what I'm saying is I want Adventure to remain continuous. I want Adventure Time to remain continuous. I want Futurama to remain continuous within that series. If they do a crossover or an in-joke for a crossover or something like that, meh, so be it. Cute, but let it go. I want my Star Wars movies to remain continuous because it's a continuous franchise.
Even though the prequels contradict most of what...
Yeah, well, yeah.
All right.
Okay. I want my Doctor Who to remain continuous. I don't particularly care if all of the extended universe stuff and the books and the comic books and, you know, the droids cartoon, I don't care whether that's continuous within the universe. I think if the movies give a nod to it or state an in-joke from either comic book or whatever or video game, and I think that's neat, but it's not necessary. And I know that this is very unpopular, but that's the way I work. I'm
either gathering the torches and pitchforks.
I know. I want House to remain continuous within House. I don't care if now that the series is over, the books remain continuity or whatever. If somebody picks up the House license.
Scott, in episode number 4, they did this, and in episode number 6, they did this.
Yeah.
Who got fired over that?
If Dark Horse comes along and says, we want to do a House comic, a House MD comic, they can pick up fresh and go for all I care. And they can take the whole TV series and go, we're taking these characters because they're interesting, and we're going to plop them into the comic. But they're, you know, but this stuff in the TV deal didn't happen and everything like that. And that's fine with me. That's fine with me. If somebody else wants to go and I'm going to write a series of House-based books and they ignore the new House comic and they ignore some stuff in the TV and they go off on their own, so be it.
Okay, well, what about when we're not talking about something fictionalized? What about when we're talking about retconning actual history?
That's dangerous.
I mean, even if it's something that's pop culture. For instance, and just go with me for a second here, okay?
Okay.
I was watching the Behind the Music on Guns N' Roses the other day.
Okay.
Okay? And according to that, Guns N' Roses basically went from playing nightclubs, they put out Appetite for Destruction, and then they sold 1 million copies and were starting to play stadiums. They completely, not even a footnote of the movie The Deadpool, the fifth right. Dirty Harry film, where Welcome to the Jungle was featured in all the advertising. Geffen Records, who owns Appetite for Destruction, has outright said, without the Deadpool, we don't think this would have ever sold 1 million albums. And right when the trailers for the Deadpool came out is when people started requesting Welcome to the Jungle be played on the radio. Not even worth a footnote, right? Nope, we did all, because from what I've heard from behind the scenes, Guns N' Roses doesn't want to admit that part of their fame is due to a movie that they didn't even want their song in. That it was, no, we did all this on our own. They don't even mention that Appetite for Destruction was out for a full year before it sold 1 million copies. It was nightclubs to stadiums because we're Guns and fucking Roses. That Dirty Harry movie, that never happened. And what about that? That's retconning history.
And that's dangerous because that's a rather minor example.
I know, but it's I literally watched this last night, so that's why it's in my head.
I know, but I mean that's a rather minor example. You're amazing at not letting me finish. That's a rather minor example. Let's talk about a major example of retconning. Holocaust deniers.
Oh my God, those fucking morons.
I know. But you've got an entire segment of people who, you know, oh, no. Hitler loved the Jews.
He ovens? What are you talking about? Yeah. They only cooked chickens in those.
Exactly. The concentration camps, those were where you went to meditate and concentrate. They were very fluffy and wonderful places to go.
Aren't
they fed you well.
Really kind of like a minority, though? There's not that many.
They are a minority, but that's a huge, horrible chunk of history of the world where they are retconning it. And they believe that there is a conspiracy, that it's all made up, and it's made to make the Jews seem to suffer and put them in power and blah, 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 blah. I don't understand it. I don't. But that's where retconning gets dangerous. Let's say our next president that's elected is a Republican, which he probably will be, and he suddenly decides to go, well, we've got all of this factual history of what George Bush and Ronald Reagan did, but what we're going to do is take that out of the history books. When Prince Charles William, whichever one takes over after the queen dies, you know, let's say he takes all of the bad things that, you know, he takes Maggie Thatcher out of the history of Britain because of all of the shitty things that she did, or takes all the shitty things that she did out of the history of Britain and stops teaching people. That's where historical fact retcon gets dangerous. If you look at older history books from the South, you will see a retcon of the Civil War. It is not called the Civil War. It is called the War of Northern Aggression.
Yeah, I've heard that.
And it wasn't because of slavery. It was because of economic reasons, and the future of the South was at stake, and the North
wanted
to...
Well, the economic reasons are factual, but...
Well, the economic reasons are factual, but the reason there are economic reasons is because of slavery.
Yes. but I'm just saying, you know, just boiling it down to slavery is kind of simplifying
the matter. Right, right, right. But, you know, that's the thing. They retconned the Civil War to make it seem like...
They weren't in the ones that were wrong.
And I learned this stuff. I learned this stuff growing up.
You also unlearned.
Yeah, for a chunk of my childhood, I believed that the South was wronged. And I believed that the war, you know, the North were full of idiots. And
now you live here.
Now I live here. So, yeah, historical retconning when it comes to actual factual history, that is a bad and can be a dangerous thing, especially when it's done on a national level.
Agreed. You know. But, you know, let's go back to something lighter. Let's just go pop culture.
Okay.
You know, like with the Guns N' Roses thing.
Sure.
When like a rock band retcons their own, you know, their own history, or the one that really bothers me is when you see a documentary about video game company, whatever, and they cut out a lot of the people really responsible, and they just focus on one person, making it seem like that one person was solely responsible for whatever that product was. And then you've got the eight other people that worked their asses off going, recognition?
Yeah, and that is bad, too. I mean, that's just denying artists their rights of not only, you know, attribution. And that's shitty, too. Like, if... And this happens in, actually, I got to admit, this happens with Lost in the Static and Radio Drum, not so much from you, but from some of our fan base are like, well, it's all Josh Hadley.
No, it's pretty much 50-50.
Yeah, and I know that, and you know that, but there's a lot of, it's a lot of retconning done from a fan perspective. And you know, I'm not about to deny that you bring the majority of the clicks into this show.
That's bullshit.
But the truth is, you know, that's denying attribution, and that's a shitty thing to do too. You're not going to get a fight out of me on that one. I don't know.
Well, let's swing back to fictional continuity then. You made me think of something when you were talking about Doctor Who. Okay.
Okay.
What about the two Peter Cushing movies? the Doctor Who movies that even Doctor Who fans say, we don't want these in continuity.
Yeah, but they are. And I mean, and Moffat in his recent writing has even acknowledged it.
That where Doctor Who has kids and his name is Doctor Who.
Yeah. And it's something that but that's, you know, that's where fan fiction can work. Because if you can go and you can fan fiction out the Peter Cushing movies and stuff and just kind of go, okay, here's our deal.
Well, you know, what about when going back to the studio saying this is continuity and then going, maybe not.
Okay.
Like with the Aliens franchise, Aliens Colonial Marines, they outright said this is what takes place between Aliens and Alien 3. And it does fit into continuity. It's stupid, it's moronic, and it's just dumb that they even went there. But it does fit in the continuity.
Okay.
Now they're coming out with the new one, Aliens Infestation, which takes place between Alien and Aliens, and stars Ripley's daughter running across an alien colony. Weyland-Yutani didn't know about the alien until Ripley was thawed out 57 years after the events of Alien, when her daughter had died of old age. So, 20th Century Fox, this is continuity. They've said that straight out. And I'm going, you don't even fucking care about the continuity, do you, you sons of bitches? If you just want to make a fun Aliens game set in that time frame, fine. Don't add the extra salt to go, no, this is continuity now. And again, gotta be Ripley, even if it's not Ellen Ripley, it's Amanda Ripley. Just go, fucking...
I don't know. I haven't played the game. I don't know how
it hasn't come out yet.
Okay.
But it's just kind of like, God, this is stupid. See, being stupid.
But I'm not prejudging. I'm not going to prejudge it. I want to know how they handle it first.
Well, if they handle as well as Colonial Marines handled the Hicks thing, that was so fucking stupid.
Yeah, I know.
That it's ridiculous.
Or if they handle it as well as Prometheus handled what Prometheus did.
Prometheus is a different thing, and I'm not giving it a pass. I'm just saying Prometheus is different because Prometheus, the studio, 20th Century Fox, wanted an Alien prequel. Ridley Scott did not.
I know.
So he basically made one that isn't, but can be if they want to stretch it.
Yeah.
So Prometheus is one of those weird cases where it was and was not made to be in continuity, if that makes sense.
And shouldn't have been.
What about the annoying retcons that aren't even intentional, I guess I should say, where maybe, let's go back to Star Wars. Why does everything in the past, the prequels, look better and far more advanced than the things that come in the future? George Lucas outright said, because the technology to make those things for us is better now. He didn't care that it wouldn't fit thematically or stylistically. It was, we can do better effects now, so that's why everything is more advanced 40 years earlier.
Well, there you go. There's your explanation. And when it comes to Star Wars, I've stopped making excuses, and I've stopped pretending that they are anything other than what they were, which was a cash-in by George Lucas for some really, really, really expensive movies for kids.
Well, that, yeah. You know, but you've got stuff like that. Or how about where this happens in TV a lot? Now, you know from working in TV that usually the pilot is made long before they start shooting episode 2.
Oh, yeah.
Of a show, because you got to figure out what works, what doesn't.
Right.
One of the things that bothers me is when the pilot either sets up stuff that's never paid off or sets up stuff that's blatantly contradicted later. Going back to Homicide: Life on the Street, Pembleton has 2 children in the pilot. He has his first kid in season 2. So you kind of go, did you guys forget that he has 2 kids in the pilot? Did they just stop appearing? Did you just kind of go, well, we don't want Pembleton to have kids now. We'll do that as a storyline later, even though he's got 2 8 and 10-year-old kids in the first episode.
And let's... pilots are weird. Because pilots are... let's call pilots what they are. They're tests. Will this play in Peoria?
That's why they're called a pilot.
Right. Because
they're seeing, literally the term comes, for those that don't know, is, will this fly?
Yeah.
That's where the term pilot comes from.
And so there are a lot of series that kind of, it's, there's the pilot and there's that episode, Captain Pike. And
then there's the series
proper. And then there's the series proper. And you'll see that, or if a series switched network. One of our famous examples we've talked about before, of course, being War of the Worlds. From, what was it, season one to season two, we go from cliffhanger to, world reset.
Yeah.
And
season one, Castwide Bloodbath.
Yeah, and I will admit, I find that annoying. Again, because it's I want my series to remain continuous. The pilot, I can kind of understand why that's kind of off in its own world, and that's okay by me. What was the one pilot that you showed me that I said really should have been
day a one?
Series? No, not day one, although that was good.
Day one was great.
I'm thinking about the one with the underground agents where they
Global Frequency?
Global Frequency, that's it.
Yeah. That one almost got picked up due to bootlegs.
Yeah. I mean, that's an amazing pilot.
It's based on a comic.
And I would love to see what they did with the series.
Read the comic, because the pilot was pretty close to the comic.
Okay. So. But I could understand why, you know, series, again, have their pilots and then they have the series proper. And I can almost make that separation there.
Well, let's look at Star Trek. Look at, like, Star Trek The Next Generation's pilot, Encounter at Farpoint. And compare it even to the really clunky first five episodes that followed it, the pilot just feels off.
Yeah.
Because it almost feels like they don't know what they're doing, especially with Encounter at Farpoint is probably, I can't believe I'm about to say that Voyager and Enterprise had stronger pilots, but they did. Yeah. It's the weakest of all the first episodes in Star Trek.
Yes.
It easily is, because they clearly don't really know what they want to do.
Right.
And I think that's usually where the pilot, it's usually, that's the shakedown. Now, what about then when you have forced retro continuity or even a forced cutoff continuity due to outside influences where maybe you didn't plan it? For instance, the actor dies. So all of a sudden, well, we were setting up nine different plot lines that this actor's part of. Now, not only do none of those work because they were the central character, but now all the shit we've already been setting up, not only can we not pay off, we got to kind of say, well, that was never happened. Because that's happened a couple of times on sci-fi shows because the actor dies.
See, there's a big difference there in ways that can be handled. It can be handled through bad retcon. And that's when you look at your writer's room and go, what?
Figure it out.
What? No, that's when you look at your writer's room and go, what happened? What happened to you? Versus you look at your good writer or writer's room and you go, all right, we don't have John Schmo anymore because he passed away. We got to come out with a way to deal with it. And I've seen it dealt with in very, very good ways where the actor has suddenly died. And Eight Simple Rules for Dating My Daughter.
That's not a good example.
Not a good series, but it was, you know, it did deal with John Ritter's death.
Oh, it dealt with it. I didn't think it dealt with it well, but it did deal with it.
But it did deal with it, and it kept it continuous.
Yes.
Versus bad writing, which simply goes, and Bob Newhart wakes up from a dream and he's working at the hotel again. That's shit writing. And that's the difference between, you know, can I understand that kind of a retcon sort of trope thing to happen because of outside influence? Yes. And I think any fan of the show, you know, I don't think anybody is going to go to Fast and the Furious 7 and go, where the fuck is Paul Walker?
Exactly, yeah.
You know, and or this movie is shit because Paul Walker's not in it. Nobody's going to say that.
Well, see, like a series like Babylon 5 had what J. Michael Straczynski called trapdoors for that, because he had everything scripted out, or at least outlined out.
Okay.
And he had what he called trapdoors for every major character in case the actor died.
Okay.
So he could still we still need to get to this point by this episode, but now this actor's gone. So I can have, I already have planned for these characters to be able to pick up the slack and take that over if this happens.
And again, that's good writing. That's, I think that as a writer of a TV show or whatever, anything where you're not dealing, where you're dealing with actors, when you're not dealing with purely fictional characters in your brain, I think that you need trap doors. I think that that should be.
But I don't think most of them think far enough ahead for that.
And that's a shame. And that, again, that's a mark of bad writing.
What about, and now, I'm a little looser with continuity when it comes to a comedy, especially an absurd comedy.
Right.
Because they're already playing with rubber reality as it is.
Yes.
Of. You know, they're playing with cartoon physics in a live action show, like David Raich's Sledgehammer.
Sure.
You remember that from the 80s?
Yes. Yes, I do.
You remember how season one ended?
Relax. I know what I'm doing.
Yes, exactly, where he loved it. It was basically what if Dirty Harry were a sitcom.
Right.
And it was hilarious.
Yeah, it was a good series.
Remember, okay, it lasted two seasons. Remember how season one ended?
No.
Sledge accidentally sets off a nuke and destroys Los Angeles.
Okay.
In a giant mushroom cloud, and he goes, okay, maybe I didn't know what I was doing. That's how season one ended, because they were told by ABC, you're no canceled.
More. Yeah.
Then they started showing reruns over the summer. Great ratings. So they said, you're picked up for another season. They're like, we really, how the fuck do we follow nuking Los Angeles? So they said, aha, we're a goofball comedy with rubber reality. Season two is a prequel to season one. There. Even though it doesn't match because they meet for the first time in the pilot, in a comedy, that can work.
Yeah.
Because they intentionally kept having nods to, yeah, we know it didn't happen like this, but so what? My Name is Earl did that all the time. They had five different reasons, or five different ways that Catalina made it to America, all contradicting the other. And they started making jokes about, that's not what you told us before. She's like, what are you, the continuity police?
Yeah.
And you know, but again, it's a comedy.
Yeah, you can, you allow, you know, like you said, you allow for some rubber reality. And I can understand that in a comedy, but yeah, for me, continuity matters. For me, continuity matters within a series. When a series starts acknowledging its own discontinuity,
issues.
Yeah, its own issues, then that's almost, you know, you almost go, ah, okay, they know. All right, they're not being stupid. They're, you know, there is some intelligence back there somewhere. Okay.
To me, the worst is when there's a cliffhanger that gets ignored.
Sure.
Like Oz. At the end of season two, Hill, who's also the narrator, he smuggles himself out, buried underneath, in a coffin underneath a dead body that's being shipped out. And he escapes. And then season three, that's never mentioned again, and Hill is just the narrator and in prison like before, and it's never brought up again. Because the writers decided between seasons, we didn't like that plot line, so we're just going to straight out ignore it.
Yeah, and
that is annoying. That's annoying. At least acknowledge it. At least, okay, he made it out, but he was recaptured or something, you know? Sure. Don't just, never happened.
Yeah, you know, he had a muscle spasm and hit the side of the coffin or whatever. You know, I mean, yes, that's annoying, and that to me is it's a way of retconning. Retconning through non-acknowledgement is annoying as hell.
Okay, now this one, the first example I'm going to give is annoying. The second example was, again, due to real-world issues. What about when you pull a Dallas?
Okay, who shot JR?
No.
No?
Hey, season four never happened because we wanted to bring season four, you know, they had a cast-wide bloodbath and, you know, a lot of the characters weren't in season four. So for season five, hey, one of the characters, he's in the shower again and he's alive. Season four was all a dream. What about that weak-ass retcon that, yeah, season four never happened?
Again, bad writing. That was the exact example I gave earlier.
Yeah,
you know.
But then look at what happened with Married with Children. That happened. You might call it bad writing. Again, you've got kind of the rubber reality because Married with Children clearly does not take place in the real world, but it was due to real-world issues. Remember when Peggy was pregnant again? It was a whole season thing. Her and Marcy were having, Marcy was pregnant too, and Al was, you know, almost committing suicide in every episode
because she was because
Katie Sagal was pregnant. And this was the third time it had happened. They wrote around it the other two. One, they only shot her from the boobs up for half the season, and then the other, she only appeared via telephone because she was visiting her relatives in Wanker County.
Both of which are addressed in Futurama, which I find hilarious. But
yes, but there's a lot of Married with Children jokes in Futurama from Katie Sagal. Yeah. But so this one, there was no way. You know, she's pregnant. In real life, Katie Sagal had a miscarriage. So the writers said it would be cruel to have her have to pretend to keep being pregnant and have the baby and whatnot, you know, as part of her job. That would just be unnecessarily cruel.
Yes.
I think is what the way they worded it.
Yes.
So Al pulled a Dallas. He wakes up and the entire pregnancy season was a nightmare that Al was having.
Again, that's a comedy, and I can kind of...
It's a cop-out, but it's not a cop-out, isn't it?
But again, if you look at the real-world things around it, you know, they could have handled it in a couple other ways.
But it was handled for the right reasons is why they did that. They were not being jerks to Katie Sagal.
Right, and they could have done it a couple other ways. They could have made her pretend and had the baby and blah, 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 and that would have probably ended her... Katie Sagal's tenure with the show, at least
they handled it sensibly.
I wouldn't blame her for walking away. Or they could have had Peggy have a miscarriage and have her go through all of that pain again on TV.
But do you really want to do that on a raunchy comedy like
No, you don't. So that's that again. I'm agreeing with you. They handled it the right way by doing a cop-out dream thing. But that... Again, it's a comedy, it's kind of rubbery, and I can understand that.
Let's stick with Married with Children, then. What about Seven?
The fact that he goes upstairs and...
And never comes back.
Never comes back.
Yet they joke about it. Every now and then, when they're having breakfast, his picture is on the milk carton as missing.
Right.
It's never mentioned again. It's just a couple of in-jokes after that. Is that the way you should do it? Because they realize they fucked up with the Seven character. Should they have gone out of their way to try and write his character out, or just kind of, he just stops appearing?
Well, again, we're dealing with a comedy. I can kind of understand that. Wasn't there a Cosby Kid that did the same thing?
There was a Cosby Kid and Happy Days.
And that's right. Happy Days was the other one that I was thinking.
Happy Days, the actors, it's never mentioned on camera, the actors came up with their own continuity of why older brother. Because remember when Happy Days took place, they said he went to Vietnam, and they couldn't deal with the fact that he got killed in Vietnam, so they just never mentioned him again.
Right.
And it's like, you know what? Then mention that on the show. That would have been a really good plot line, honestly.
Yeah, that would have been a great episode. Those very special episodes.
Yeah, that would have been a good one. Not just, he's, you know, and all of a sudden, and it's not only that they never mentioned him again. All of a sudden, Richie Cunningham's the oldest brother. They mentioned that numerous times. He's their oldest kid.
Mm-hmm.
So they're literally saying, yeah, that character from the first season that was a main character, he never existed.
Yeah.
That, I think, is the wrong way to do it.
I think so. And you know, especially with Happy Days, because I can only imagine the impact that we lost him in Vietnam and therefore we're never going to mention him because we can't deal with the pain. I mean, the impact that would have had.
That's a very real reaction people had to losing kids in Nam, too. Oh,
yeah. Well, World War II, World War I, Nam, really, any war. Yes. Even Afghanistan, I'm sure there's some family out there somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, that's a real reaction that people deal with.
Well, what about when continuities from different types of shows are linked? Usually due to a direct crossover. Is that good or bad? For instance... The show lasted four seasons, but it was always low rated. Remember Early Edition from the 90s?
Not really.
It was a sci-fi show on CBS. A guy, it's never explained, at least in the episodes
I saw. Oh, he got the paper a day early?
He got the paper a day early and was able to change the events of what he saw. It's actually a really intriguing premise, honestly.
Yeah, and I think it was even done in a Twilight Zone at one point. But anyway.
And that episode dealt with, and there were vampires in it and aliens. I mean, it was a sci-fi show.
Okay.
And they had a crossover with Chicago Hope, a show arguably set in reality.
Right.
So you kind of go, okay, so does that mean vampires and aliens exist in Chicago Hope's continuity now? Especially because Chicago Hope crossed over with Homicide and Law and Order. So does that mean aliens now exist in Law and Order's continuity?
See,
and It's like when you do it in one, you can't just, well, no, see, only early edition has vampires. Chicago Hope doesn't, even though the characters were had an official crossover.
See, and that's when you kind of have to walk away and go, it's a TV show.
I'm asking it, though.
I know, and that's what I'm saying. And I think I give audiences more credit than that. I think, it, you know, the when it comes to Chicago Hope and early edition, it was a, hey, neat moment.
Both shows are on CBS. They're on the same night, one after the other. Let's do a crossover.
Exactly. And that's a, hey, neat moment. And writers sometimes do stuff like that just to have the audience go, hey, neat. And then it's never addressed again. And the crossover aspect of bringing the rest of the universe with this character is never addressed again. And I'm okay with that.
But sometimes they do that in a really brilliant way. Going back to Munch, his crossover with the X-Files. His meeting with Mulder, because the X-Files episode with Munch is a prequel to both Homicide and the X-Files, takes place in 89. That's where Munch becomes a conspiracy theorist for his character on Homicide. They even have a brilliant dig, because it's the origin of the Lone Gunman in that episode as well. And one of them was selling bootleg cable boxes, which had a tendency to short out and burn your house down. On Homicide, written and aired long before this X-Files episode, Munch had an illegal cable hookup, which malfunctioned and burned his house down. See, that's a brilliant way to link these two shows together.
Brilliant writing. Brilliant writing.
That's people that are trying.
Right. But at the same time, that's also just a hey, neat moment.
It is, because then you got to go, so this massive government conspiracy and the black oil exists in Homicide's timeline too?
Maybe, maybe not. Who cares? Again, seeing Munch on X-Files, that's just a hey, neat moment.
I'm just saying, I'm a little, you know...
You're a little bit more nitpicky.
I'm not yelling at you. You're a little more flippant about continuity. I'm a little more serious about
You're
it.
You're a little bit more nitpicky.
It's not nitpicky. I'm doing the job that they, the writers, the producers, should be doing. They should be aware of their own continuity. I mean, it's sad when Star Trek The Next Generation was in its final season... They were actually going to conventions to ask people about continuity issues. Fans like, well, if we did this, would this contradict? Well, see, in episode 19A, you did this. So, yes, the writers were using the fans' nerdiness to go, this makes our job easier. They're good. Doing our work for us.
Good on the writers.
We don't have to go back and watch all these episodes. They have them memorized.
Right.
So that's lazy.
No, that's smart.
Lazy. Lazy and smart is a very thin line, my friend.
That's smart.
Lazy and smart are a very thin line.
Seriously, if somebody out there, one of our fans or something, is keeping an encyclopedic knowledge of every time that we contradict ourselves, I'm sure it's happened, and that's fine. I've been known to go to fans of the show to go, have we discussed this, do you know? And they'll come back with, yeah, on this episode. And I'll go and I'll listen. I'll go, oh, yeah, go say.
Oh, yeah, I guess we did bring that up. Hey, what do you know? Okay.
So, you know, that to me is not lazy. That's smart. If you've got somebody who is willing to keep an encyclopedic knowledge of this stuff, let them.
I don't know. You call me nitpicky. I call me serious.
I call you nitpicky because
I call you flippant and uncaring.
And I think that sometimes you just have to go, hey, it's a TV show.
I disagree.
I can't.
I disagree.
That's fine. Disagree all you want.
Go to Adam and Eve. Go to 1201beyond.com. Kind of like the show. Well, 1201beyond.com@gmail.com, or the actual one for this specific show is
Lost in the Static Show.
Yeah, Lost in the Static Show. That's right. You know, that show thing still bugs me.
I know, but that's because somebody took lostinthestatic@gmail.com.
I know, but it just bugs me that I have to put Lost in the Static Show. You want to talk about fucking nitpicky? That irks me, man. That just sticks in my fucking craw. It does.
Okay.
I don't know why. So, have a good night.
Good night, everybody. Goodbye. We'll see you next time.
Lost in the Static is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.